Good morning. You listen to FloridaDaily.net, and I'm Kemp Farr. This morning, my guest is John Ball, who's managing director with Stifel Nicolaus. John, how you doing?
Great, Kemp. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, good to be with you. I wanted to talk to you about third quarter results, and let's start with Interface. This is the first quarter Interface has been without Bentley, and they're suffering through this Australian fire. But European, actually, while when I first looked at it, I thought Europe was going to be dragging them down, and actually it's good news out of Europe, isn't it?
Western Europe's still under some pressure. I think they're holding up reasonably well. They're undergoing a pretty major restructuring there. They're big in the UK. I think that market's held up a little better recently. Russia and other parts are showing some growth. So I think given what they're up against, pretty good results. You mentioned the fire in Australia, certainly, you know, a disappointment, and it sort of disrupts your service flow there. That economy, by the way, too, is some serious headwinds. So the combination there is tough, and that had been a high-growth market for them the last few years. They'll get through that. They'll be able to, I think, build a new facility somewhere else, and ultimately could prove beneficial, but, you know, a difficult transition period. You know, domestically, I think we're still looking at Tile taking share from Broadband. That's good. Pretty decent numbers out of the office corporate arena. I'm still waiting for a lot of the cash that corporations are sitting on to get unleashed. I think a resolution of the fiscal cliff would certainly help on that in that regard. But we got a lot of pressure on the government, institutional education, you know, sort of public spend side has been tough. So kind of cross currents there, but absolute growth in the U.S., pretty stable raw material situation. So all in all, more green lights, I'd say, than yellow or red lights. You know, it's kind of been an uphill slog in Europe, and in the public spend piece, where they're doing well is in corporate in the U.S., and there's still some growth in Asia.
Okay, one more quick comment about them. You know, they're going direct to market on the residential side with these floor stores. They're going to open 12 this year. They had 6 before that. They'll have a total of 18. I think they're doing $1 to $2 million per store. It's not green yet as far as, you know, profitable black. It actually seems to be a pretty good business for them, doesn't it?
Yeah, I failed to mention that. It is getting material. Yeah, I think they've found that the internet catalog strategy only got them so far. Mm-hmm. And obviously, we're not going to be seeing floor stores in Peoria. But yeah. Major metros, it makes sense. I think the, you know, like a lot of retail, if you have the catalog internet backing up the retail, doesn't matter where the order gets placed. You know, it's getting the order that matters. So seeing some terrific numbers out of their Soho store. You know, they've been established in Chicago for a while. Good numbers there. So, yeah, I think it's, I know they ran a 15% off Black Friday event, mm-hmm. which I think rang the cash register a little bit. So I think they're kind of getting off the tarmac on that business. Yeah, there's still a lot of, you know, drag on earnings from growing a store base from scratch. But, you know, I think they're making progress.
Right, right. And they are renting those stores, so the investment.
Sure. Oh, yes. Yeah. Lease locations. Yep.
All right, so Armstrong, just to move to them, their third quarter results, their top line was off about 5%, but they continue. Actually, you made the comment that their EBITDA is up 11%, which is a record since their bankruptcy, right?
Yeah. You know, what they've been able to achieve on a cash flow and margin basis has been impressive, you know, without a whole lot of revenue to work with. You know, their core end market, you know, in the United States, and I'm talking flooring now, leave the ceilings out, is, you know, the repair, remodel. You know, they're big with the home center channel. You know, that business is fairly, it really hadn't recovered. I mean, we can get all excited about the home build piece, but the remodel piece is still challenging. Certainly we see that in carpet. I mean, it's true in wood and ceramic and vinyl, even in the repair remodel piece. So we're waiting for that to lift off. The units of ceilings on their building products, they call it, I call it ceilings, is down. You know, we're down mid-single digits in units. They've gotten almost mid-single digit pricing, so it's relatively flattish on the revenue line. And obviously, that kind of pricing helps your margin. So combination of pricing in ceilings, really tight SG&A controls, and yet down units, it's created this sort of flat revenue line with expanding margins, and so that's why you're seeing record profitability, even though they're facing some pretty good headwinds.
Mm-hmm. Help me again, because you see the numbers, obviously, in more dimension than I do. The divestiture of cabinets and the divestiture of wood distribution, is that where the 5% decline in revenue comes from?
No, again, they're going to be backing out those numbers. Okay. We're looking at, in the latest quarter, and there's certainly some currency in this. You know, the resilient was off 9%, and the wood was off 4%. I'm not sure about the wood. The wood may have not have backed that out from a year prior, but the distribution piece was pretty small on that number. So, and cabinets is zeroed out. That doesn't explain the decline. As I said, they're challenged in units and in ceilings for sure. We got some revenue offset, but with the foreign currency translations hurting. Materially, we're looking at down revenues for Armstrong.
All right, so the last one is the one that actually, Mohawk, has got a lot of activity,
yeah.
To say the least. And their quarter and year-to-date, up 2% on the revenue side, and earnings doing very nicely. Obviously, they bought Pergo for $150 million, so they're changing the whole dimension there. With that acquisition, that's number two buying number one. That gives them, I think, about 35% market share. And then the rumor is that they're talking to Marazzi worldwide to buy them. And the way I run my numbers, that gives them in the ceramic tile market almost a 50% market share in the U.S. That's a very interesting company to watch.
Yeah, I guess we need to take them seriously the next time they say, well, our balance sheet's now in a position where we're going to entertain acquisitions. Their leverage ratio got down to 1.7 times debt to EBITDA, and they said we're going to be looking at acquisitions, potentially sizable ones, and likely offshore, and bingo, bingo. Now, Marazzi obviously is a rumor, not a fact at this point, so it's hard for me to comment on that other than what we know about Marazzi. Yeah, the Pergo deal has to make all kinds of synergy sense. We'll see what they do, but they're overlapping operations. Lack of vertical structure, I think, for Pergo here in the U.S., so they'll benefit from Edelman's position here for sure. You know, Edelman's a beast in Europe, so I got to believe that thing is going to be materially accretive to earnings once we find out precisely what the numbers are and the plans are, but that may take a little while. So I'm excited about that. The Marazzi's a little tougher to gauge. Obviously, private entity, we don't know the numbers. You know, that would not seem to me on the surface as much of a cost synergy deal as, you know, sort of intellectual property kind of technology, style, design, leadership, process, know-how that maybe helps the rest of the Daltile organization, as well as, you know, there is some overlap in the U.S. that, as you said, concentrates share probably north of 50% by my calculation, but not a known deal, so a little hard to comment. I think the key out of Mohawk in the third quarter was the kind of leverage you see to earnings on what were very modest unit gains. As you know, they're doing well with the Silk Smart Strand carpet products. You know, the Daltile numbers were strong, both on units and margins. And you got to be impressed with what Unilin's done in the teeth of the Western European economies tanking. So really encouraging what we call contribution margin, meaning the level of EBIT increase versus the level of revenue increase in the quarter.
Yeah, just to echo what you said, it says in their comments for third quarter that the Mohawk segment is flat, and it's Daltile and Unilin that's up 9 and 10%. So.
Yes, but we still saw a 10-15% increase in Mohawk EBIT on relatively flat, slightly down, actually, revenue. Mm-hmm. So we're even getting some earnings leverage out of that segment. So if we ever get carpet to recover, you know, this could be a good ride. Obviously, the Daltile segment's a little more tied to new construction than is the Mohawk side. There's obviously tailwinds there. That looks strong. Commercial construction looks like it's beginning to pick up. There may be a year or so lag before they see that in their orders. But, you know, a lot of early indicators are improving. Home prices are going up. Repair, remodel activity, I guess it's off a bottom and improving. It hadn't really improved much yet, but there's a long way to go. I would think there's a lot of pent-up demand. Touch-up areas that have been worn out, uglied out, trafficked out, styled out, whatever. We've had a long, long recession. I know we've talked about this before, Kemp. The duration of this recession is unprecedented. unless you go back to the Great Depression. And that matters because it just means that we've gone that much longer without updating, repairing, remodeling things. And I'm convinced that the desire is there. Now we just need the income, confidence, ability to borrow, home equity lines might be coming back into play if we get home prices going up.
So is 13 the year, or are we going to wait till 14 before we see all that break?
Yeah, I guess a lot will hinge on this fiscal cliff issue, what happens with taxation. There's so many variables, that's tough. What I can tell you is that housing has gone from a sector of the economy that has certainly been a drag on GDP to now being an outperformer or accretive to GDP. And I think we'll remain in that mode for 13, 14, maybe 15, and even beyond that possibly. How strong that absolute level, you know, will be dictated a little bit by, you know, the other variables. And we are looking at tax increases for sure.
Right.
What bearing will that have? Can we offset that with rising home prices and increased confidence? We'll just have to sort of wait and see how those macro things play out. There's some momentum for the first time in a long time in the residential world. In the commercial world, if you look out 12 months, some of the leading indicators are turning more positive.
Right.
As I said, there's a ton of corporate cash. I really hope we can address corporate tax rates. If we can get those lower, that might still instill some confidence in the corporate world. So a lot of money on the sidelines that could be unleashed there that could make that segment better. And we've got the construction piece, both residentially and commercially, in an up mode. That's going to be momentum that's going to be hard to turn the other way. So, you know, I think there's some reason for optimism as we head into 13, and I frankly haven't seen for years.
That's good to hear. Okay. Well, John, it's good to talk to you. Again, we've been talking to John Ball, who's the managing director with Stiefel Nicholas, and you've been listening to Kempar and FloorDaily.net.